Howdy, everybody. My name is J.R. Sparrow, and it comes a time that I come out here and we perform these shows. We get them together. We talk about all kinds of things. We cover mental health, and mental health comes with two stigmas. And two stigmas that come with this is there has to be some type of trauma. There has to be an event that you have to build from and you have to grow from. So that's the harshness of doing things when we talk about mental health and empowerment. We have to get a story. And sometimes that story's hard. And when that story's hard, it takes a special person to tell it because not everybody is willing to tell their story or give a portion of their life to strangers. But in this case, we have an amazing lady all the way from Lithuania. I have Lolita Garin with me. How are you doing?
I am so happy to be here. Thank you for inviting.
And the nostalgic thing we do on the show is because I gave you a little intro there, we come in and we want to know about your story. So, Lolita, your story, overcoming burnout, childhood trauma is truly inspiring. If you could go back in time and give your younger self one piece of advice about managing stress, what would it be?
Well, if I'll go back and I remember how much I struggled and how much in the pain and suffering was I going when I was a child, I really could tell them one thing is not as bad as you think it is, and you're stronger than you think you are.
Okay. Now let me ask you this. Growing up where you came from and coming here to the US, correct? Now, it's cultural differences. It's like being here because of COVID and everything, mental health has become a stronger thing that people talk about. We can embrace each other, we can look at each other and say, "Hey, I'm going through something today." Now, coming from a foreign country, did you have a similar embrace? Did family encourage you to let them know what's going on inside, or did they not let you know what's going on inside?
You know, one thing and I came to the US from Lithuania 24 years ago. There's one thing I realized that it doesn't really matter where you live, as long as you're happy. But also, the same problems are in the families, no matter what country they're in. So, when I came here to the US, I realized there are so many people that struggled with the same type of issues. And so, since I grew up with a father who was alcoholic, and I did not have a big T trauma, you know, like something happened once. For me, it was really just dealing with everyday stress and being always in fear what's going to happen after come back home after school. And every single day I was stressed out and hypervigilant about anything. I realized that when I came here to US, the one I started talking with other people, there was a lot of childhood trauma in this country as well. So it really is not oh, there's a difference between countries. Because overall, we all want the same thing, no matter what country we live in, no matter what religion we are, no matter what skin color we have, we all want to be just be happy and seen and loved and appreciated at the end of the day.
Okay. Now, going into your childhood real fast, you spoke about your father being an alcoholic. Did this later translate to anything in your later life, with dealing with alcoholics or being an alcoholic or anything like that?
So what how it really impacted me that because my dad was an alcoholic and he was dealing so much with his addiction and his pain, and I do believe that addiction is just a self-soothing mechanism from not being able to process your own pain, that he was so concentrated on that he really didn't give me enough of attention or support that I needed as a child. And of course my mom never had any addictions, so I think that's why I was what looked like from outside. I had a very happy and very successful childhood because I was always fed. I went to school and I had the clothes, and it looks like a total normal childhood, and I should be very happy. But what happened really underneath all of that is that I didn't get that support and love and appreciation from my dad. That totally impacted me, how I was looking at the relationships after that, how I was relating to people. Also, that a stressful environment when I was afraid to go home after school because I don't know what to expect. And when my dad will get very drunk, he will get violent. He never touched me or my mom, but there were a lot of broken pieces around the house, let's put it that way, that made me to constantly being afraid of everything else. And that impacted how I was dealing with stress overall and for the rest of my life.
Okay, so we can agree on this. There was a famous singer named Luther Vandross. He was a famous R&B singer when I was growing up. He said he had a song called A house is not a home without love. So growing up, I had that same sentiment. I grew up in a house of love, so I grew up a little different. You grew up and people saw a home, but it was really a house because of what your father did. And knowing that as you got older, that's the one thing that brings, that's the, we call this, it's a word called commonality. That's the common thing that bridges a lot of people together that come from trauma and hurt. And I'm glad that you spoke about that because a lot of people miss that. They miss the fact that, hey, yes, it looks like a home on the exterior, but really it was just a house. We played mom, dad, and daughter and siblings if they're there. And when you go through those steps and you go through those motions, people turn away from you because they think everything's great. And I thank you for explaining that. Now, going on into another area, people struggle with setting boundaries in the workplace, fearing that sometimes additional responsibilities may hinder their career growth. How did you learn to assertively decline burdensome tasks while still maintaining professional relationships and advancing your career?
So that was one of the things that hit me the first is when I came to this country, and I knew that if I work hard, I will achieve whatever I like to achieve. And I was afraid to say no. I had no boundaries whatsoever. I was people pleaser. If somebody tells me, "Hey, can you take care of this?" I will do it. And that's how I end up working weekends and just totally not even having enough time to do like regular things like nutrition or do your own like going to gym after work. And that what really impacted my health, and I end up in the emergency room because of that. And when I started realizing that, okay, I need to change something, and then I became a stress management coach, and I started doing the staples of stress management, what they call like meditation, yoga, and all of this. But what really changed a lot of things, and when I discovered that I had an issue, is when I came across this business book, what they were talking about, how to just build your coaching business, because I was doing already coaching at the time. That the author was mentioning that there is a she was an adult child of an alcoholic, and I never heard of it before. And I was like, oh my gosh, that totally makes sense now. And then I finally realized, like, oh, that's how I project everything else in my life, because I was impacted by my childhood trauma that I didn't even know existed. And then when I started realizing that, oh, I'm a people pleaser, I'm afraid to say no, I cannot have any boundaries, it is because I am afraid if I am not going to please the other one, they will abandon me. And that totally was connected to my father, because I was constantly trying to please him, because if I will be in a bad mood or he will somehow will set him up, he will be angry at me, and then he will start throwing things and whatever. Obviously, it was not so extreme. But from the position of child, of looking from a child's position, everything could become a big thing in drama for me. So I was already people pleaser, and I didn't even know what boundaries were, and I was always afraid to say no. But then when I discovered this truth about myself, that oh, I'm really just projecting my childhood trauma into everything into my life, and I started implementing few little things and saying no here and there, I realized that the end, nobody died. And life didn't end. And then the more I started implementing those boundaries in my career, in my relationships, in my friendships, I realized that, oh wow, if I say no and nothing happens, I gain more trust, because the more boundaries I was implementing it, the more it helped me with my burnout, with my relationships. Also, when you start implementing boundaries, people also look at you differently. They trust you more, they also respect you more, and you also start trusting and respecting yourself as well. And it all starts from understanding that you need to have those boundaries, and you need to start implementing them by little steps, and just be consistent with that, consistent setting boundaries with yourself, the same as with others.
Okay, and I like that. And one thing that I got out of everything you said, you had to get over the fear of rejection. Getting over that fear of rejection, it seems like once you turned that pivot and got past that moment, you got to a place where you felt as an authority of yourself. And that authority gave you a self-confidence that you could exude to other people that led on to your coaching. Now, one thing that we do on the show, and we usually do this at some point, is it's a classic thing. We call it the shameless plug. It's where people can learn where to meet and greet you across the internet and how to get your services and how to be involved with Lolita. So please tell them real quick, Lolita, where they can find you across the internet and how they can get into your ecosystem.
So you're welcome to search on Facebook or Instagram. Just you can plug in my name, Lolita Guarin, or you can go to my website, beamazingyou.com, all spelled out.
Okay, thank you for that. Now, in your experience, how does the ability to effectively manage stress impact not only our professional lives, but also our personal relationships and overall outlook on life? Are there any surprising connections you've discovered between stress management and the other areas of life?
Well, I think stress management, it is so important in anything, in any aspect of your life, even driving in traffic going home after work day and everybody's hungry and everybody's tired. And if, let's say, somebody cuts you off in traffic, you need to be prepared and well equipped how to manage your stress and how to manage yourself and your own emotions, really. Because there's so many, and I just can talk about myself, like a way few years, whatever back, I will just get so upset when somebody cuts me off in traffic. But later, when I changed the point of view about that, and I said, okay, those people who just cut me off, it doesn't mean anything personal, right? Because I believe we ourselves do things, who creating stress in our minds is ourselves. If you're going to pay attention to something that's really not worth paying attention to, if you're going to magnetize something and say, oh my gosh, how dare they say this, or how dare they do this, when you think about it, what is your own reaction to what just happened? And if you ask yourself a question, well, will that matter in 5 years? Or is it really impacting my life? So when I saw, okay, somebody cut me off in traffic, and I say, you know what? Maybe they really need to go back home. Maybe they have a toddler in the backseat that is, needs something right now. And when I change that point of view, that not everybody really to get me, as I always thought, since I have this childhood trauma, I realized that all of us at the end of the day are struggling with something. And if we just have more compassion towards others, and then and not create a, such a big deal, and really ask ourselves, okay, how is that, how stressful that is, and am I really making a big deal out of it? And it can help you in the work environment just to have more compassion towards others, in the relationships. And when you start managing your stress, you also help other people to regulate their own stress as well.
Okay, I like that. I like that right there. Now, something that we do on the show is I pay homage to a news magazine called 2020. As a kid growing up on Friday nights after I was done watching TGI Friday on ABC, this news magazine would come on with John Stossel. He was a comic relief. Diane Sawyer, she was on this show and she was very poignant and she had amazing questions she would ask. Elizabeth Vargas, with her world-renowned, she just had good worldview. She would ask questions that made sense and kind of put you in a certain direction. But then there was this lady, the late great Barbara Walters. Barbara Walters would come on around 10:40 at night, and at 10:40 at night, she could get on there. And if she was doing a good show, the newscast would let her run over to 11:04. If she wasn't doing such a great show, they cut her off right at 11 o'clock. But the one thing that Barbara Walters did that the others couldn't do, they made whoever she was interviewing very personable to the audience, and they made you want to learn more about the person when you woke up the next day. So, Lolita, are you ready for your 2020 questions?
Let's do it.
All right, so here we go. First question: the hardest thing in life is to pivot. We pivot when something stops us or impedes on our progress. So, what age did you have to decide that you had to pivot?
I think that's already happened for me when I was a teenager, because I really realized that I don't want to live the way I was living, and it was way too painful, and I have a bigger aspirations that I need to really plan my life ahead. And believe it or not, I already knew I'm going to come to United States of America when I was a teenager. Also, I was born on 4th of July, so I figured that was a sign for me to do it.
Okay, so coming to America, there's many different stereotypes, misconceptions, and things that are popularized by our media that you can see on TV when you're somewhere else. Was there anything that really threw you off about moving or coming to the United States, that you thought was real that you've seen on TV?
I did not have that much of expectations. I watched, of course, a lot of movies, and I portrayed United States of America one way. And when I started living here in Houston, I didn't see such a big difference. But there's one thing that really threw me off, is that everybody were very super nice to me. And I come from Lithuania. We do not talk to strangers. Like if I don't know someone and we're in an elevator, I'm not even going to look the direction. I heard that that's how other people from the north act. I don't know. You be the one who judge. But I remember when I just started my work and I came as an au pair. There was this older couple that would tell me good morning in on the street. Or I will get to the grocery store and the cashier said, "Hey, how are you? Did you find everything okay?" And I tell you this, for 2 weeks, I was thinking that people know somebody else that looks like me and they think that I'm her. And then later on, I realized like, no, that's how everybody is here. Like everybody says, "Hello, how are you?" You know, you get an elevator and they see you and they smile at you. And that's how I really started to smile, to be honest, because where I come from, it's like you don't know somebody, you don't say hi, not even you look at that direction. So this one for me was number one thing that I realized that I actually felt very much included in the community because everybody saw me.
Okay, and I can agree with that to a certain degree because where I live in West Virginia, we are, and this is crazy, we're the South North and we're the North South. We're the middle divider between the North and the South because the Mason-Dixon line runs through here. West Virginia is friendly, like you say, where you're from in Houston or where you live in Houston. But the further north you go, there's some friendly people, but up north, once you get near New York and stuff like that, it's a faster life. And even in Houston, in some places, it's a fast life. San Antonio is another one that's fast. Now, on to my next question. So you come here, you come to America, things happen and you meet a special someone. And the special someone you meet, you end up marrying, and you two have a life together. Now, you two get together and you're with your spouse and you're noticing and making sure that the things that happened in your past with your father, you make sure those things are not in the person that you want to spend the rest of your life with. So in doing so, how did you look at the person that you've fallen in love with and make sure that they weren't your dad?
So actually, what you just said, it happened to me, and I pretty much married my father. Looks like, yes, I always would laugh at that sentence, and they say, "Oh, the daughter's always marrying the fathers," and I was like, "This is not me. This is not me. There's no way I will marry somebody who doesn't pay attention to me, who doesn't care about me, and I do not get any emotional support." And that's exactly who I married. So I was married with my ex-husband for 14 years until I realized like, wait, I'm not getting what I need and my needs matter. And that's when I started my journey to discover that I was adult child alcoholic and how that impacted my career, my relationships, and my marriage. I realized that, wait, that's not where I really belong. That's not what I want. And I think if I would not discovered that I had a traumatic childhood and I did not discover that I filter everything all my life through that, I probably will be still living in the same marriage because for me, pain equaled love. And to me, just being emotionally neglected was my normal. So I invite everyone to really reassess their life situations and any relationships and think about it, is this normal to me? Doesn't make me happy because if something doesn't make you happy, it doesn't mean that you have to get through that. And it doesn't mean that it's okay for you to do that because our brain loves to be in the safety zone. And even if it's painful, it's better for us to be painful. At least we know what it is, than just say, you know what, I'm just going to look for something else, even if I don't know will make me happier or not. So yeah, I ended that relationship. And it made a huge impact for me. So I'm definitely next relationship I'll get to into. Now I'm like very, very careful and making sure that my needs are met as well, and it will be balanced of equal give and take.
Okay, and I like that, and thank you. And that right there was probably the most personable moment because you showed that you seen a flaw, and you said this flaw is not going to be me, and I moved away from it, and now I'm better. Now here goes the Barbara Walters question. This is the hard one. Now, being someone that helps people, there's a part of you that has a negativity that a lot of people don't get to see, and this negative portion is how you actually take care of yourself. Because me being similar to you, we're empaths. We take care of people. We try to make sure other people, are good. So the next question I'm going to ask you is this, and this is something that people probably don't ask you a lot. How do you take care of yourself after you're done taking care of everybody else?
It really came. I came to this conclusion that I also need to take care of myself. Number one, because if I am exhausted, if I'm burned out, if I have nothing to give, I cannot help other people. And that's what they tell my clients when they do coaching one-on-one. They come and they say, I'm burned out, but I have a family, I have business that I need to take care of. And I tell them, well, you need to start taking care of yourself. And the first answer I get is like, well, I don't have time for this. It's like, but you always need to remember, if you will not refill yourself, you will have nothing to give to others. So that was one realization that I understood, that I need to pace myself. I need to make sure I keep my boundaries, even if I want to save the world and I want to help all of them. I need to make sure that I pencil myself and in a schedule, and I do things to replenish myself. Otherwise, I will have no energy to take care of others.
Okay, and I like that. Now, Lolita, it comes part of the show where I give a testament because me and you met just a little bit ago. We had a little, I call it a semi pre-call, and we went over things in preparation for shows and stuff like this. You know, some people send you questions so you know things so you can prepare a little bit better. And I kind of threw some curveballs in there because I gave you questions so that you can know what's going on. And you, I don't know if you prepared answers or you just got it all in your head. I feel like you got it all in your head. But this one thing that I do on the show is I give a testament because I have read about you and I've heard you talk and you can see a difference in you. I seen a different smile when you were talking about things that went from the past to the present. Going into the present, you can see a difference in your face. I don't know if you can see it because I can see you through the camera, but or not through the camera, but on the video. That's what I meant to say. So here's the thing. Perseverance, that's your name. Perseverance is your middle name. Lolita Perseverance Boring. You went above and beyond what you had to. You could have just stayed in the same rhyme and reason that you could have in Lithuania, still came to the United States, and you could have stayed in that marriage that you were in for 14 years. You could have stayed in a place of hurt and trauma, but you decided that you didn't want any more drama. And you said, hey, I'm going to put myself first. And after I put myself first, I'm going to take that energy and help others instead of just being selfish. You could have been so selfish and got great about everything in your life and said, hey, I'm great. You can look at it from here. You can see it here. I can just put it in a book and just sell it, or I could just make a little course for it and just go about my business, or I don't have to share it with anyone. But you decided to not be selfish. You did the most selfless thing you could ever do in life by giving your mental stability, your foundation, your workflow to people. And that's something I want to commend you on. That's part of the testament I'm giving you right now. And it's hard to do that because there's someone right now that's struggling that will hear this and will get in touch with you at some point in the near future. And they're going to tell you their story. And you're going to be able to collect to them and connect to them. And you're going to have that commonality that I was talking about earlier. And you all will ring together and you will help someone save themselves from what they're not. You'll help them become who they truly are. And it takes as a very strong and powerful person to do that. So I want to tell you thank you for that because I can't do that for a lot of people. I mean, I can help people, but I can't go out here and I can't save the world. But you're saving the world one person at a time. And from that one person, it multiplies because when you help them, they help 10 other people. So by the time you're in your 70s or 80s, you probably had helped half the world and don't even know that you helped them through that one person you helped because everything is a network. It's everything's connected. So I want to thank you for that. And I want you to always keep that. So when you look in the mirror and you put your clothes on and you fix everything and you're looking right there in the mirror, so you can say, Lolita has made a difference. And no matter how big it is or how small it may be to you, the impact is never what we think about. It's the thought that we put it out there. We projected, like you said earlier about the negative portion you were projecting. You're projecting a good portion of who you are and what you stand for. And people need that because not a lot of people will do that for other people. So I want to tell you thank you for that. Okay. And
Well, thank you for first. I want to also thank you because you changing people's lives. You know, my message will not be going across walls if you will not be taking time to interview me right now. So you making a huge difference in the world as well.
I thank you for that, but no, you're the true champion here, and I'll stand by your side with this one thing. And one thing I want to challenge the audience to do, I want you to, in the show notes, I'll have information for you to get in touch with Lolita so that you can find her. And this is the thing that everyone has to realize. Pivoting is the greatest thing you can do in life. Taking a moment to let something stop you, and then you rationalize. Rationalization is something that is a lost art in these fast, convenient humans that we are today. So, Lolita, as a lasting message, what I want you to do real quick is I want you to leave us with a mission statement. Leave us with a strong call to action or some way for people to just know that they can persevere. They can have that perseverance you have. So you, the floor is yours. Go ahead.
So I will say there's nothing wrong with you, and you are not alone. And that's just because when I was going through the hard time, I felt alone. And that's why I do what I do, because I want to give that message that no matter who somebody's struggling or going through pain, they should allow themselves to reach out to other people and tell others. And when I published my book, Stress Management for Adult Children of Alcoholics, I got a lot of people reaching out to me and saying, thank you so much, because I thought there was only me that living this through. Because we come a lot with the shame of thinking that if we came from a dysfunctional family, that is shameful to talk to other people about this. And then we just rather pretend like nothing happening and we have those amazing childhoods. So yeah, there's nothing wrong with you. There's nothing wrong with wanting to fulfill your needs, and you are not alone, so reach out to others.
And I want to thank you very much for that. So, the great way that the show always ends, I'm J.R. Sparrow, your host, and this is Lolita Garland. She has been on here with me today presenting an amazing story, and she has an amazing book that you can pick up. You forgot to give us a plug for where we can find the book.
Oh, so here's the thing. For those who are listening in and they're still here with us, I will give a link that you can actually get this book, Stress Management for Adult Children of Alcoholics, for free. And if you just don't mind putting that in the description, then you can come in and get it as a PDF and you can read it and give to those who really need and can contribute from it.
Okay, so definitely we'll do that, audience. So on that note, she's Lolita, I'm JR, and we're signing off.